Hey there, it's Dane Reinhardt bringing you the President's Perspective, a conversation between current and future leaders of NAHU. So, Marcy, thanks for joining David and I. It's sort of a collision of the two podcast worlds inside NAHU.
This is a crossover, I think, is what they call this in the comic book world. This is a crossover event.
That's right. There will be super monetization of this somewhere down the road not too long from now. So, again, thanks for being with us and being the wealth of knowledge that all of us are looking for. I said to David this morning that I want to start moving our podcast more to a model where it's not just internally interesting to NAHU members, but also to make it externally interesting. Because I had a conversation with a friend and a friend of his and his wife at a cafe on Saturday afternoon. They're like, oh, you do a podcast? Yeah, what's it about? I was like, you wouldn't be interested. And he's like, no, tell me about it. And I told him about it. He goes, you're right, I wouldn't be interested.
Dane, I have the same conversation all the time with my friends. And what
I want to do something that'll be interesting. And I do think that what we're about to talk about should interest all of the people who have been engaged, which is impossible not to be. I found the most amusing part of the last 2 weeks was the once in a while they'd find the undecided. I'm like, who the hell are you? Like, everybody's decided.
I just want to note for the record that I don't tell my friends that I do a podcast. So I don't want anybody to be confused with me and doing something cool. So I'm just trying to avoid that at all costs.
Very good. The record shows that. So Marcy, I looked this morning at some of the four primary things that the Biden administration is keying towards. One is the environment. One is the French Accord. And a few other issues that they're moving towards. And obviously the focus of this part of our interest level will be the healthcare pieces of it. You and Janet, and then Janet and Alan Katz recently sort of discussed what things would look like in the weeks leading up to now with a Biden administration. But here we are. Just wanted to get your take on all that. And that's probably the last thing I say on this podcast. So thank you.
Thanks.
By the way, Trump just fired his defense secretary.
Yes, that news is breaking, as well as trying to figure out ways to possibly relieve Dr. Fauci of his duties before an incoming administration comes in. But President-elect Biden is moving forward with building his transition team, and his transition website is up. It's called buildbackbetter.com. That's his transition website, where you can find more information about him and obviously Vice President-elect Kamala Harris, but also what his platform is for bridging this gap in the transition. And Dane, you mentioned it correct. So the top four things that he is looking at for his transition are COVID-19, economic recovery, racial equity, and climate change. So I think with this, we're going to have to read between the lines a little bit to get to some of the things that NAHU has been working on. Obviously, we've been working a lot with the COVID-19 relief. There have been endless emergency rules that have come out from all of the agencies that we've responded to, trying to make sure that your interests and the interests of your clients are represented in some of these emergency rules. And so I think we're going to get some of our healthcare pieces in some of the COVID-19 bucket of his transition. And then part of our pieces, I think, are also going to be in that economic recovery. There's a huge focus in his economic recovery plan on, obviously, getting people back to work and expanding different benefits for employers. And with that, where it doesn't really spell out the connection between employers, employment, and healthcare, I think we all see that, right? We make that connection very easily. And so while we're seeing this interest in building the economy, making sure we're increasing those that are employed and really preserving employers, I think we're going to see stabilization with the employer-sponsored market. And you'll see that with those top four pieces that I mentioned, there is not a talk about, even though they're talking about access to care with COVID-19, they're not talking about trying to push through anything like a public option or anything like that at this time. So those four things being the pillars for him to start off the first 100 days, first several months of his presidency, I think give us a different lens to look at healthcare through than maybe we were during the campaign season.
To me, one of the interesting conversations I've had probably multiple times last week is a clarification that President-elect Biden had nowhere in his healthcare position to adopt something like Medicare for All or any kind of single payer system. Because I've heard from numerous employers, I guess you're worried about your business. And my reaction's been actually, I'm not. In fact, I would expect very little to impact the employer market, regardless of what else he proposes over the next 4 years, given the way he's kind of approached this issue. And I think it's interesting to hear kind of a reality versus perception statement on that.
Yes. And I think it depends on what news you're listening to and who you're talking to, for sure. And you're right. In his platform, it did not say Medicare for All. There was a section suggesting a lowering of eligibility of age for Medicare, but that is by far vastly different than Medicare for All and opening the market up and mandating that everyone go to a Medicare platform. His was suggesting lowering the age either to 55 60. Or 60. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's going to require a Democratic Senate, which right. is unlikely. Well, it depends on who's paying attention in Georgia in January, but it's fairly likely that the Senate stays. That is an important point, though, a nuance that we don't know who the hell is going to vote in January in Georgia. I mean, it could, right. be, could go any direction.
It's changed even in the news broadcasting over the past week, with now we pretty much know we're going to have two runoffs for Senate in Georgia, January 5th, like you guys just mentioned. And who's going to turn out? You know, we just saw Georgia go blue, which was really surprising, and vote for Biden. So are those folks going to come back out because they're so energized about what they just did and vote Democrat on the Senate ticket? Or are we going to see Republicans that really want to make up for losing the presidency coming out and voting? Or are we going to see just some disinterest across the board after all of this, because we're all just having so much fatigue of seeing this every day and playing out? So like I said, every day we're hearing different statistics of who they're expecting to turn out. And we are at that point where we're expecting the Georgia seats to determine whether it's a 50-50 split or if it's a 51-49 in the Senate. And for folks that need a little brush up on their civics, to pass something in the Senate through regular order, you need 60 votes. To pass something through reconciliation or some other special rules, you need a simple majority. So it is going to make it difficult to get things passed trying to get to 60. And then if there is a split 50-50, then the vice president is the tie-breaking vote. And in this case, we know that will be Vice President Kamala Harris.
Yeah, I just think that there's obviously recognition of the fact that there are final votes to be held and final counts to be done. And as I've been writing an email for our clients today, and as I reminded people, we actually haven't had the presidential election yet. The presidential right. election's in early December when the Electoral College votes are cast in each state capital. And so ultimately we're in that stage of finalizing who those electors will be and everything else. But on its current track, then I think the question becomes, how does this really start to impact the regulatory process? Because I think that's where more change is likely.
I agree. And I'll go back and talk about that timeline for a second, just to remind folks. And David is right. We are in the midst of all of this. These are all projections, but I think for the most part, we wouldn't have gotten to this point of announcing Biden as the president-elect if there weren't enough reports that are accurate to be released. So between November 4th and December 14th, the states are charged with counting the popular vote and filing certificates of ascertainment. That just means filing paperwork that says, yes, this is what our votes are. And then on the 14th, the Electoral College in each state meets to vote. by December 23rd, the results are to be delivered to federal officials. And then on January 6th, a joint session of Congress, meaning both the House and the Senate, meet to declare the official election results. And then, as many people know, January 20th is Inauguration Day. So we are still in the midst of that, regardless of the reporting that's being done. And remember, those dates were all set up a very, very long time ago when things were being reported by Pony Express. And, you know, even though we've got people that are, I'll use my Southern phrase here, bless their hearts, counting ballots by hand right now to get those exact counts. So it does still take a long time to have everything certified and official. But for right now, I do trust what we're seeing reported out. But then to your point, David, about the regulatory action, I think we're going to see that continuing. President Trump embraced the regulatory aspects of his authority and being able to ask the different agencies to do things that were within their power that maybe Congress wasn't getting to or wasn't able to agree on. Here, we are going to have a tighter House than we did this past congressional session, meaning the Democrats are going to have the majority, but it's going to be by a smaller margin than before. We're going to have a tighter Senate, just as we just talked about. So it can be very difficult to get things through when you have that very slight difference in the House and Senate. And so I think that President Biden is going to take one thing he might agree with President Trump, this might be the only one, is to use the regulatory authority that he has to work through executive orders and regulations to affect change. And to that approach, we're already going through some of the more recent, either proposed or final rules that have come out from the Trump administration to try to gauge where we think this administration is going to be on either trying to walk some of those back or have some of them struck so that we can work with all of you to give you those updates. Since we do know we're going to be on a tight timeline up until that January 20th inauguration date.
My understanding is that the ones post roughly June 20th maybe, are ones that can be struck down more easily than ones that President Trump signed into effect before then. Can you explain, just for my edification, I'm not aware of why that is, and then also what would fit into that window of, say, June to when he's president, that would be noteworthy for our internal and external constituents that may be of interest?
Sure. And Dane, I think you're talking about the executive orders. And
sorry, assume that falls under the regulatory process,
yes.
Right?
Yes, yeah. So, and the executive orders are asking the agencies to do things. The reason why those that have been done later are easier to resend is because, for the most part, the agencies have maybe started working on some of those proposed rules, but they're not finished. And so it's easier for Joe Biden to come in later and say, okay, I want you to stop this. That was just an executive order asking you to do this. And now I'm telling you, I don't want this. I mean, that's obviously a very simplified version of what the conversation is. Or knowing Joe Biden, he might throw in some other fun words amongst that. So that's why it's easier. Those executive orders that have been acted on and a proposed rule has been released, comments are being taken in. At that point, the proposed rule would have to be formally rescinded, which it happens during a presidential tenure. President Trump rescinded one of the drug rules that he had. Not uncommon also to see that happen when someone new comes into the administration to kind of reset the timeline and try to walk some of those things back. And so the executive orders that we had during that time were that big group of prescription drug executive orders that we had, and then that grouping of COVID-19 executive orders that included some leniency for renters, extension on payment of student loans. And then one of the big one that I think touches most members and their clients was that ability to delay the payroll tax. It wasn't a payroll tax holiday, but employers or payroll tax companies could decide to delay the payroll tax until a later time, which in that date wasn't set.
I think one of the really interesting things that a lot of people in our business are probably paying attention to is some of the regulations specifically related to limited duration, short-term policies and also about how this might affect things like the ICRA regulations. I mean, to me, those are two areas that I'm the most interested to hear what will come from a Biden administration. Because one thing I think that we all have learned very well over the last 4 years is that the president on their own has no real authority to just sign something and it changes. It is about ultimately the deliberative process, even when it's a regulatory change. So I think those are two areas that I think we're all going to be watching very closely over the next few months.
Yeah, and I'll tell a fun little story. I say that, but I'm not trying to downplay the importance of this at all, but it shows the difference between a campaign promise and being able to fulfill that through your members of Congress and the makeup there. So when Kennedy ran, and I know you're looking at me like, Marcy, how do you know this? You were not born then. But when JFK was running for president, he would say, I can deliver the Civil Rights Act with a swipe of the pen. And it indicating that that was his campaign promise, was to try to get the Civil Rights Act passed. And after he was elected, he had a lot of trouble with Congress, and people would send him pens in the mail to the White House saying, here's your pen, do it with a swipe of a pen, you can install the Civil Rights Act. But it's very, very hard to do. So it wasn't until after his passing that then President Johnson was able to do that. Here, with a swipe of a pen, it's very hard for President Biden to be able to go back on all of those things without taking steps, either through Congress or through the regulatory system. So with the short-term plans, I think this is probably one thing that we could see them do very early. It was one of the last regulations that the Obama administration released, was to tighten up that time frame for short-term limited duration plans and make it so it was 3 months. And then there was this huge outcry. And we saw that kind of reversed and extended to the ability to go to 12 months and 36 months if the carrier approves under Trump. So I think it's a possibility that we could see Biden come in and say, we're going to take that one back because we did it, you know, it was one of the last ones we did before we walked out the door, and we want to see that one come back. We have seen some states, however, do away with short-term plans entirely because of that extension through the Trump administration. And so we may see Biden allow states to still have the ability to decide a shorter term, but to bring it back from that 36 months that's allowed now. I think the ICHRAs and association health plans are another area that we'll see them revisiting. And I know everyone is doing cartwheels thinking that we could have even more ICHRA rules coming out. It's not something that anyone wants to really think about, is having to go back through all of those rules. But there are some problems with the ICHRA rules. And this administration really wanted it to work. They really wanted it to happen. And I think that's another reason why a Biden administration might go back through and say, we see how this doesn't work and where the problems are, and we're either going to do away with them or we're going to release another set of rules that addresses some of the concerns that people have.
I think another thing that, again, perception reality, and I know we talked about this a lot during the adoption of the ACA rules, but one of the other things that I think is a political reality is that we're about to have a new president who served in the United States Senate for almost 40 years. And because of that, he's used to two things. What I would refer to as how things are done, but also the impact of lobbyists and their ability to sway things. And, you know, one of the stories I was reminded of this weekend was when they did away with some of the subsidies that were going to those standalone nonprofit carriers that were being created to compete in the ACA, that the person who really was pushing that from the White House to get that money rescinded was then Vice President Biden, who was hearing from his friends in the carrier community how much they did not want those entities to exist. And so I think the increased voice that people in the business community are going to have in the White House is something that I think gets underplayed in this process, and is something that maybe gives us a little bit of comfort in terms of some market realities being looked at as rules and regulations are adopted.
I agree with that. I don't think we're going to see situations where the CEOs of carriers have an appointment with the White House and then 24 hours before they all decide they're not going and throw their hands up, like we've seen with this administration, both with insurance carriers, pharmaceutical execs. You know, I could go down the line with those things. And it's usually something because something is said in haste and the business community backs away from the negotiation table. Here, President-elect Biden understands why you have to go to those meetings, why those meetings are important, why it's important to hear from people. And I think as this campaign has shown and how he's portrayed himself through this campaign as, yes, he's been in the Senate for over 40 years and then was vice president. But, you know, when he talks about riding the train back and forth from Delaware to D.C. and actually seeing what the American people, what their lives are like. And I've ridden that train before. And I'm telling you, it is not just going through the nicest neighborhoods of the country. And Dane is shaking his head too, because you've ridden that train to Baltimore and back, and you see America. And I think that President-elect Biden understands that talking to business leaders, even though some folks might say, oh, you're only listening to the CEOs, that's not really what it is. It's listening to the business leaders that are going to help those businesses down the line and really reach out their hands and help people up. And that, I think, is important for anyone in that seat in the White House to be able to listen to.
I'll say, and I know we're going to start wrapping up here in a second, but one other thing I really want to at least acknowledge, as an association, we're nonpartisan. We're required to work with everybody. And undoubtedly, we have a ton of members who were very disappointed Saturday and over the last week and over the next few weeks over what's happened. But ultimately, I think it's an important reminder of what we do in Washington, which is understand what's going on, try and help make changes where we can, but by avoiding being too partisan one way or the other, it still allows us to be effective regardless of who's in the White House or regardless of what's going on in Congress. And I think that's one of the hardest things I've thought about in the last couple of days as we talk to members and being leadership positions, you know, saying, we understand that this is very difficult personally and politically, but we also have to recognize we have a job to do and let's make sure we still are around to do it. And I think that's one of the great comforts I have is knowing that you and your team are in Washington working for us, who can really talk to the people who are coming. There's going to be a new Secretary of Health and Human Services. There's going to be a new Secretary of Labor. And all those people are going to ultimately need to come to us to get the same market perspective that we've brought to the Trump administration over the last 4 years.
And I think that's really important to point out. We are not a partisan organization. We do have our political action committee that gives to both sides of the aisle, but we do not give to presidential candidates. I know I have spoken very positively about President-elect Biden, and that's because we know we're going to be working with him for the next 4 years. So it would be ill-advised of me not to speak favorably of him, just as we spoke favorably when President Trump was elected and coming into office. But it's not just being nice and acting favorably. It's also looking at the political realities. So Dave, as you're saying, people may be upset about the results of the election. I just want to kind of rewind to 2016, when many of our members were very excited about those results and came to Capitol Conference in February of 2017, expecting NEHU to have embraced a repeal, replace, repair bill that was not favorable to our market, and it wasn't favorable to employers or to agents and brokers. And so we embraced our own campaign of market stability. And we've been very successful in getting some of those pieces in place and blocking others. I think people forget in 2017, there was a proposal that would have eliminated the employer exclusion that we are very successful in being able to pull back. So just as there was excitement in 2016, thinking that we were going to go big and have this huge repeal, repair, replace piece, here again, now we're in 2020, we're moving into planning with CapCon 2021, and we're still going to embrace that market stability piece because that's the most important message that we can bring. We're not going to have these wide brushstrokes, and we know we're not going to see a Medicare for all. So we're not going to focus only on opposing that. just because President-elect Biden is in the White House, we're going to focus on those ways that we can really affect change and make things better for you and your clients to be able to embrace the health insurance market that we have and make it better.
Yeah, I just think that's really important. I think what we do as an association is vital. And I'm reminded of a story from, I guess, 2012. I can't remember, maybe it was 9 or 13, but where we had a member of Congress who went and Googled what members had said about that person and ultimately canceled a CapCon visit. And I think we have to be mindful as an association that we know this market better than anybody. And the best way we can help protect our clients, protect what we do as a living, is to really ultimately accept where we are and to be prepared to give real world examples about how things work and what we can do to help make things better. That I just know we're all incredibly grateful for what you and your team do to help us and our profession be and do what it can for its clients. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for your time today, Marcy.
Thanks, Dane. It's fun to have a crossover podcast.
Yes, for sure.
In next week's episode, we'll have Wonder Woman showing up with Superman and Spider-Man, so it'll be good. Thank you all. Dane, you want to wrap up like you always do?
Yeah, please feel free to reach out to me. Best way to reach me on my mobile number, 410-746-5281. Thanks, everybody.